This episode of The Best of Humble and Fred is brought to you by FYI Music News, The Retirement Sherpa, Gig Sky, The Chambers Plan, Spearhead Brewing Company, and Strain Print.
To connect with Humble and Fred anytime at 833-437-8465. That's 833-HF-STINK.
Wind you through this Tuesday post-election in Ontario. Yeah, I wasn't going to vote. I really honestly could care less. I'm just going to be honest with you.
Could care less about what?
All of it. I couldn't tell you who my local councillor was and what they care about. The only reason I voted because, like I said, I got some flack from some women in my life.
Well, I voted. I always do. But usually I send the call out to my children to remind them. I didn't this time because the last time I did, I guess what would the last one have been? The provincial election.
Yes, yes.
My daughter said to me, "Yes, Dad, I'm voting. I'm a 35-year-old woman. I'm quite aware of my responsibilities."
Is that how your daughter talks?
So that... So I didn't call this time, but not necessarily for that reason. Maybe it was that complacency with civic elections, municipal elections. It's like, you know, this one mattered to me. Patrick Brown was elected mayor of Brampton. I live in Brampton. I wasn't big on Linda Jeffrey. When she was my MPP, didn't perform for me. And then as mayor, didn't perform for me, Fred Patterson, for the things I was interested in. So I went and voted for Patty.
Well, I love that, man. I think it's great. And I also love the fact that you had things that you were interested in.
It was all self-absorbed. Well,
but that's what people should do.
Yeah.
I didn't. And so I had nothing that interested me other than, you know, speaking of my kids, I don't know what Charlie did, but I was quite impressed with Spencer. She had... You know, researched some issues. I didn't agree with anything she said, but I thought it was great that she had taken an interest in it. And she said, "I'm going to vote. This is only the second time in my life I've been allowed to, so I'm going to." And you should too. I was like, making a bunch of noises like that. I just want to go home and watch Netflix.
Well, it goes beyond you should. I mean, yeah, we should vote. But if you go in there totally unaware and unequipped with issues and what matters. I mean, yeah, you voted, but does it really matter? What we should do is we should take an interest in what's going on around us.
I absolutely agree. Yeah.
But we tend not to.
But I don't.
No, I know.
Certainly not at the... I always vote. But at the municipal level, and when I went in there last night at Jesus High School...
Jesus Memorial.
Jesus Elementary. You know, I voted for Tory. As for reasons that I specified. I know the guys...
Who'd you vote for counselor?
A guy named Mike Grimes.
How about school trustee?
Our mother of... I literally looked at school trustee and I'm like, I don't know any of these people.
St. Teresa of Rexdale.
Well, you don't really have kids in school anyway.
Yeah, when it came to trustee, I think I made my decision based on whose name I thought was funniest.
Yeah. A lot of that goes... You know how often I sit with people, and I don't even call them on it anymore because I'm embarrassed for them. You'll be sitting talking politics, and people mix up provincial and federal politics.
Oh, yes.
Like, it's weird, you know? Like, they'll take, like, Doug Ford and then start talking about Trudeau. Or, you know, and it's just, like, weird. It's like, yeah, wow.
Oh, yeah.
You have no idea on that level. Number one, why are we even having a conversation? And you actually go and vote? I mean, you have a responsibility to vote, but what does that vote mean when you don't even understand the levels of government?
Yeah. And that's why, whether I, like I said, I had a, you know, Spencer had her wisdom teeth out yesterday. And I just want to get to that in a second. Let's check some boxes. What is that phrase we're supposed to use now? Yeah. Oh, tick some boxes?
Tick every box. Yeah. Tick every box.
Let's tick some boxes.
Yeah. Freddie Eisenberger.
So we're going to... I want to get to wisdom teeth in a minute because it was a completely different experience than I thought it was going to be in her case. Anyway, she was a little bit groggy yesterday, but she did tell me that she wanted me to vote and she had done some research. And I thought that was great that she had taken. And it's funny because she had taken it upon herself to inform herself of some issues that she thought were important and whatever they were.
And she got out and voted despite the money.
I took her to vote.
Okay.
And then after I took her to vote, and then I took my ex-wife to vote, and then girlfriend Rachel was a bit, I could tell she was a little bit, not disappointed, but surprised that I wasn't involved at the municipal level. So, as I was coming home after the whole day, I thought, all right. I went and got my card, I went over to Jesus School, and I did it. But I wasn't very informed, and again, other than knowing that John Tory personally is a guy that will do well for others... And that was it. That was my criterium.
I was surprised. Did I see in the city of Toronto the turnout was about 40%, which wasn't bad.
Oh, absolutely. Much better than other cities. I know that.
Oh, yeah. Some of them were just ridiculous.
In Vaughan, it's 27%.
Yeah, yeah.
That's it. 1 in 4.
Mm-hmm. And you know what they say? If you don't vote, you can't complain. And, you know, there's something to that.
Yeah, yeah.
There really is something to that. Because prior to an election, you know, you're given lots of... warning. We knew, you know, election's coming for a long time, which gives you enough time to equip yourself with the issues and, you know, carving out a little time to go and vote. But you look at Vaughan, 75% of the people eligible to vote didn't even bother going. I mean, really, what right do you have to complain about everything? Anything? I mean, really?
I agree.
So all of a sudden your taxes go up. Oh, I'm mad. You know, I'm going to talk to my, well, you know.
Our water bill doubled in 4 years and no one noticed. Quite literally no one noticed.
My goodness, Phil. Mm-hmm.
Hey, Sergeant Sean's
expensive.
Here. Did you vote in Georgetown? Do they have elections? Are they allowed? Do they have elected officials there? Or is it like, is it run by witches and
knights,
warlocks? And I don't know
squires.
What happens in Georgetown. Are you guys still on the feudal system?
Pretty much. Yeah, it's all retired people in Georgetown. So we have the same everyone. Everyone that
mayor?
We ever had.
Is there a mayor of Geotown?
Mayor Rick Bennett. Same guy. He's going on his third term now.
It's funny. I lived in Oakville for a long time, and Rob Burton is the guy there. He's been mayor. Just check to see if Rob Burton got reelected.
He
was mayor for a long time.
How about this one? In 1979, I moved... 78, I guess, moved to Milton with my parents. And I left in 1980 when I got married. In 1980, a guy named Gord Krantz was elected mayor of Milton, Ontario. And last night he was reelected for like the 21st time.
Wow.
So he's been, anyway, he's been like mayor for like 38 years or something. Isn't that crazy?
Krantz.
People just, yeah, Gordon Krantz.
Granny.
People just, it's like the.
I guarantee you people call him Cranny.
It's like the Hazel McCallion thing.
Mm-hmm.
He just becomes a habit, right?
Who's mayor of Mississauga these days? Is Hazel still mayor?
No.
Oh, she's not?
And it's a woman named Crombie.
Yeah, Bonnie Crombie.
She her name re-elected. Is Bonnie Crombie.
Yes.
And,
are you sure it's not Hazel?
No, it's not Hazel.
Bonnie.
And the thing is, Hazel didn't die in office.
No. She hasn't died yet.
No, I know she hasn't.
She refuses.
Yeah. She refuses.
She does. She's like, she is literally saying to death, F you, death.
Yeah.
I got to run for re-election.
She's going to, she's got to be close to 100.
Yeah, but there's lots of those stories around the province of the country, like mayors that are dug in, and people just don't consider anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you got to be a pretty good mayor, like, for 30-some-odd years. Like, people just go by, oh, I'm voting for Gord, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, wouldn't you like a change? Oh, Gordy's good.
Cranny.
Gord's good.
The Cran man. Vote Cran.
Mr. Cran.
But really, what are you doing when you're the mayor of Milton? Like, what is there to do? It's just there.
I know you're trying to be funny and what have you.
I don't know what I'm trying to
do. But have you
anymore.
Seen the growth of Milton over the past few years?
Milton Schmilton.
Milton had an issue for years that it was something about a water supply or something. Bringing
sewer and water pipes. That's the problem with them.
Anyway, they changed some bylaws and then all of a sudden, it's crazy.
What?
It's and expensive.
Yes. Granny fixed it?
Mm-hmm. I guess, yeah, Granny.
The Cran Man.
Granny got her done.
Granny got her done.
What's it? Crans?
Yeah, Gord Kranz.
This is the most I've spoken about the mayor of Milton ever.
Yeah.
And what did you want to say about Georgetown?
What was I going to say about Georgetown? I don't know. Rick Bonnet. He's back. That's pretty cool.
Buddy.
He's been in since he was 26 years old in Georgetown. What? So,
have you had your wisdom teeth out?
Yep.
Here, there's somebody at the door.
I have had the wisdom teeth out.
Let's go and figure who that is. Usually it's somebody not sure if they're supposed to come in. Is that Brian? He's early. I don't mind if he's early. If Brian Gerstein wants to come on earlier, that would be easier for us. Is that you?
Yeah, it's me.
Yeah, well, go get comfortable. I was in my
anyway.
Early.
I mean, we wouldn't normally talk about the mayor of Milton, but that's a story. That's a
Cranman.
You know, that's a documentary story there.
Oh, yeah. And you're right; it is a huge, growing population right now. That
yeah.
I think what we should do is get Brian comfortable, even though he's scheduled for 8:30. Maybe we'll just switch Brian and well, I'll tell you what. Let's get another minute or two for Brett. Brian, are you comfortable coming on? You with all those notes you have there. Don't need them. Don't need them. Brian Gerstein is a legendary real estate. Well, he's really the. He's almost like a real estate icon in this town.
You know, part of Tory's speech last night, he said, my mandate is to make Toronto a livable and an affordable city. And I'm thinking, wow, that word affordable. Yee. You know, what does that mean?
Well, Brian will tell us. Brian is a sales representative with a PSR brokerage.
Doesn't mean home ownership.
He knows stuff.
Yeah.
Someone just tweeted us, I'm not dead yet. Old guy from Monty Python's Holy Grail and Hazel McCallion.
I'm not dead yet.
Somebody else had texted when we were talking about titles for elected officials, Your Grace. Who gets that?
I guess that's what you can call mayors.
Really?
Your Grace.
No. But,
well, not as happy. I said, municipal mayors are usually also the head of the church. Mm. It's our British system.
Not anymore. They're not.
No. He's saying traditionally.
Yeah.
Not head of the. John Tory's not head of the Church of Toronto.
I did call him Your Worship once, and he's like, no, just call me John. I'm like, okay.
Johnny.
Got it.
Well, I wouldn't want anybody to call me Your Worship.
I tried.
Sickening.
That's weird, because whenever I come over to your house, you always say, don't forget to call me Your Worship.
Hey, Your Grace.
I drove by your place yesterday. I got mixed up.
Yeah?
I got mixed up, because usually I take whatever that highway now is called around your place, like the 410 as it sort of winds west and then north.
Right.
But yesterday I was coming from this little golf course, you know, which I do occasionally.
Once in a while.
And I drove onto the Mayfield. By mistake, I just kept going on Mayfield. Then I realized, oh, there's your house. And I was going to pop in.
You should have.
I couldn't. I was late. I was late for something. But I realized I just got off on the wrong road at one point. I was right on as you enter the Patterson Estates. That's where I was.
Nice. You should have dropped in.
I like to drop in.
Yeah.
Pop in.
You could have helped me with one of my many treatments.
Fred, are you okay? Would you mind putting a little salve at the end of my dink from the catheter? Do you have a little drop?
Don't laugh.
Do you have a drop of CBD you can put in my pee hole?
Little chirp cream.
Let's get Brian in here then. And you know what we'll do, guys? As soon as Brett Tanner comes in, get him comfortable. Tell him that we're just switching things up. later I'll tell you. I just want to talk about the, it was strange because when I was a kid, I had my wisdom teeth out, but my wisdom teeth had come in and then they pull them out.
Right.
But my little kid yesterday, well, she had like surgery, like they had to cut them, cut open her gums. And anyway, I just wasn't aware that they did those things. 15 years of real estate experience. That's what this gentleman has. And there isn't any place that I've ever lived where more people were interested in the cost of housing and what it could have been and what it was and what it might be. Please welcome to our program a legendary man, Brian Gerstein.
Woo!
Brian.
Hello, sir.
Thank you, Howard. Appreciate it.
Brian.
What a pleasure.
How's your son doing, by the way?
Very good.
How do you know Danny?
He doesn't. I had asked him a couple of questions. I told him.
Oh, I see. Right, yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah, this city is, it's funny because just recently I've been having conversations with some friends about, you know, selling houses, buying houses. What got you interested in this?
Basically, I was in the corporate world. I worked for a couple of fun jobs at Kawasaki and Yamaha, and a lot of fun. It was great working on the bikes and got corporately reshuffled. So at that point, I had one kid that was on the way. My wife was working full-time in PR, and you know what? Let's go into my business for myself, and the only person that can fire me is myself.
Oh, and then that's when you got your brokerage license and
correct.
Things?
That's what we thought. We were wrong.
That's true. We thought if we just worked for ourselves, no one can fire us.
But they still got us.
They got
Brian,
us, Brian.
They got us, Brian.
They found us and they fired us anyway.
We digress. This is about you.
You heard me say that of all the places I've lived in Los Angeles, Montreal, Vancouver, Calgary, Toronto. This is the city where it just is. Nothing will get a conversation going quicker than talking about, you know, what things could be, how much they are. What, you know, in the 15 years you've been doing this, it's just been amazing, the growth in real estate.
It really has. I've seen many markets in those years. I've seen balanced markets. I've seen buyer's markets. I've seen seller's markets. I've seen the absolute insanity of 2 years ago in the spring, which was basically a license to print money. And most real estate agents did their best years ever, and a lot of people came into the business.
You're talking about 2016.
Yeah, well, the spring. Yeah, until Kathleen Wynne killed off the market, you know. So that's
when I sold my place. I killed off the market because prior to my selling of the place I had in Oakville, things were going crazy until I put my house on the market.
Oh, great
and
timing!
Then things just slowed right down.
You know, it's crazy. You know, Brian. I look at the real estate listings often, and I'll see like a standard bungalow, 1,400 square feet, maybe, with a price tag of $1.3 million. Who's buying that? That's not somebody's dream home.
No, far from it.
But that's somebody's just a home. And who's the type of person that wants to spend $1.4 million for a modest, drab-looking bungalow?
I think you're looking at it from the opposite way, Fred. The way you have to look at it is it's land value. So it's lot size, frontage is where the value of real estate is, and in the right location, you have plenty of builders or people that want to build a custom home. They'll knock it down. Right. They'll have their dream home. They're happy to pay. And, you know, if you have money to burn, you know, it's a great idea.
But if you buy a house for 1 point, say you're first getting into the market in Toronto, you're looking somewhere, say a detached home around $1 million. Most people are carrying mortgages of what, $700,000-$800,000?
Easily, yeah. It's you don't want to live off Kraft dinner as well. Right. I mean, that's the issue. And because of the mortgage stress test, you have to qualify for basically 2 points above the posted rate. And that's really killing purchasing power. And right now, we have a massive issue right now with our younger generation, your son. Uh-huh. And, you know, the huge issue right now is bank of mom and dad is going to be a resource. And basically, one out of three of them are running to mom and dad and saying, I need a handout here.
Right.
Otherwise, you know, I just can't make it. And even the rents are out of this world right now.
Well, if you're mortgaging, if you're putting $800,000 or $700,000 on a mortgage at $600 per $100,000,
correct?
Yeah. What do you have to make?
That's $4,300 a month just to pay your mortgage,
what do you have to make, and how do you sleep at night in case you lose that job, which happens all the time?
Right, and the part of the problem is right now you have the two incomes you need, and God forbid one of you gets laid off, or you have contract work, which can be erratic at times, and it's a really scary situation. I really fear about our kids.
Well, and in this, I know there was some back and forth between you and Fred about Fred's son, Danny, but, you know, mm-hmm. you think about people when we were younger. I bought my first home. I was 30, 31, and I certainly couldn't have afforded $4,300 in mortgage. And we were doing pretty well. We were making, you know, decent money, but it wasn't something you'd ever have to get your head around. And now, you know, you start with $1 million home. Not a $300,000 home like we did.
Right. Well, that's why condos now are the new homeownership, Howard. And basically, that's the reality. Our kids are going to be looking at, you know, 500-600 square feet, and they're going to have to make the best of it. Eventually, they're going to have to move out to the burbs. And when I say the burbs, I mean the burbs, you know, if they want to get the picket fence in the backyard.
Okay, so when houses, those bungalows and those ones with frontage, when they go on sale, who's going to be buying them if it's not the kids?
Well, eventually it will be when the baby boomers move on to their next step, wherever that is going to be.
They'll come in out of the condos and out of the burbs back into the city?
I think so. I think eventually, well, we have to look down the time horizon a little bit longer, but at some point they're going to get the power back because out of necessity, because there'll be more of them and less of the people that are left.
You know, you look at ratios. When I bought my first house, in Brantford for $62,000 and I was making $60,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's funny, the ratio of people that make good money, even when you were spending $150,000 on a house and making $75,000, that was 50% of the price of the home, and so on and so on and so on. That's totally been blown out of the water.
Completely. Yeah. Income levels have not kept up, and this is a real problem. And affordable housing is another issue that keeps getting talked about. The reality is we have so many people moving into the GTA. That's not going to stop. The jobs are here, and people will always migrate to the jobs. The problem is, where are we going to put them all? And the reality is that these people are going to have to go live in less space, are going to have to raise kids. I mean, I don't know if you saw the stories in Vancouver. There are people living in condos raising, like, they have five, six people, families living in, like, 800 square feet, and it's insane.
Yeah.
Well, and that is the problem. The question it always is, like, who has the money to afford those kind of prices? Yeah, this is a big city, and there's lots of people making big city incomes. But just the average person is going to be boxed out of the market. And whether, and you talk about, you know, when Fred and I first started working together, I moved out to Oakville. He was in Brampton. And mm-hmm. you know, I lived in a fairly nice house, and then his place is fantastic. But that's, you know, it's 40 minutes from the city. You're talking about people now moving to Milton and Georgetown and places like that where you're an hour, you're taking trains. It's a whole different, there'll be a different lifestyle built in the GTA in the next 25 years.
Correct. I don't know if you heard Patrick Brown last night. I happened to catch his acceptance speech in Brampton, and he was talking about basically, let's bring the jobs back to Brampton. Let's get the high tech in here. Let's find a way to keep our kids here, make it affordable. And I think that's the pathway to take. And let's keep our little mini municipalities and make them little hubs and work centers where you can live and work and not lose $6 billion in productivity and traffic every year. It's insanity.
You know, you talk about the bank of mom and dad. Like, I'm in that position. I'd love to help my son. My daughter already owns. But the thing is, the prices in Toronto, what I could help wouldn't even put a dent in it.
Correct.
You know, it used to be, you might be able to give your kid $10,000-$20,000 and it would make a good dent in a down payment, and they're on their way. What's that mean now?
Yeah,
like, you literally have to mortgage your place to allow them to get a place.
And people are sadly having to resort to do that.
Yeah.
It's you know,
well,
I'm planning on
charging my kids rent to live with me. That's what I want to do.
I actually have I do a lot of new developments, and it just so happened I got a commission check for free of them that I sold at 150 Red Pass. So I called the three of my clients, and I said, so what are you guys going to do with it? Are you know, we're coming close to occupancy. Are you going to rent it out? Are you going to sell it on assignment with me? Are you going to hang on to it? Like, what are your plans? So I spoke to three of them, and interesting analysis. One of them is going to give it to his son, and I said, I hope you're charging his son at least part of the rent. He says, oh, yeah, I'm definitely going to do that. You know, that's a plan. The other one is thinking it over, and the other one, you know, wants to rent it out as well, you know, and keep it, you know, just as an investment property. But those days when you can buy a condo at like $500 a square foot, we're looking now, we have new projects coming on that are like $1,500 to $2,000 a square foot. Just think of that. $1,500 to $2,000 a square foot.
And those markets are going up rapidly as well. I have a friend of mine whose wife has a little condo in the city, you know, right in the city, and she bought it 5 months ago. $1,000 a square foot. It's now $1,400 a square
foot.
When
is it going to end, Howard?
That's the thing. So it's like either you move away from the city, or if you live in the city, you know, you're going to be a family with roommates.
You know, there was a thing in radio, there still is, a big fish in a small pond. It's like everybody wanted to get into Toronto, but sometimes people realize make less money, live in a smaller market, and you live a nicer life.
Yeah, and I can see that happening a lot. But the problem is a lot of the people that have left, Fred, have basically raised property values exactly what you're talking about, and the locals are complaining about it right now.
No, I get it. But you know what I mean? Sometimes you have to compromise. Say your career, move to a smaller market, maybe do a job that isn't your first priority, but now you can afford a house. So
where are you guys moving? Your studio? You can go to a small town somewhere? And
that's right.
We're going to move to Stony Creek, and we're going to set up a yurt on a farm.
Well, you may find yourself turning over in bed, and you may find yourself beside Humble and Fred. And you may ask yourself, my God, how did they get here?
Humble and Fred, brought to you by FYI Music News, the Retirement Sherpa, Gig Sky, the Chambers Plan, Spearhead Brewing Company, and Strain Print. This is the best of Humble and Fred, brought to you by FYI Music News, the Retirement Sherpa, Gig Sky, the Chambers Plan, Spearhead Brewing Company, and Strain Print.
Broadway is dark tonight. A little bit weaker than you used to be. Broadway is dark tonight.
On up, one and two and ready and play.
You're listening. Legendary Humble and Fred Show, Canada's national morning show, Humble and Fred Radio.
It's great to be with you around Southern Ontario today. People waking up to new and old councils alike. 1-833-437-8465. 1-833-HF-STINK. Welcome back to our program. A gentleman who has been making changes in the city of Toronto. And the city of Toronto said no changes when it comes to mayor. Please welcome His Honor, the Royal Worship, Highness,
His Grace,
John Tory. There you go.
You can keep going, man, if you want. Did you have more things you wanted to say?
His Highness, the Right Honorable John, congratulations, sir.
When I was elected 4 years ago, the first time, I told my wife, with tongue-in-cheek, I said to her when we were going to bed that night, I said, well, you realize now you have to call me sir, and I can't even repeat on a polite family radio show like this what I was told at that stage. I was just teasing her, of course, but it wasn't received well.
Speaking of going to bed, I saw you on TV sort of late last night, and then I heard you on the radio this morning, like at 5, just after 5 a.m. Did you sleep last night, John?
Yeah, but, you know, guys, I only sleep like 4.5 to 5 hours a night anyway, so I'm just lucky that way. It really does give you more time to get stuff done. And so I slept about the same last night as I would any night, and it meant that I was ready to go at 5 o'clock this morning to do interviews. So, but it does give you a lot of extra hours in the day when you only sleep for 5 hours.
Well, first of all, just quickly, let us say how much we appreciate you giving us your time. You've always been so kind and generous to us, and we thank you for it. Now, 4 years ago, we had our 25th anniversary, and you were also kind enough to drop by our big anniversary show at the Horseshoe. And I would just ask you simply, in 4 years of having done this job, what did you learn, and did it turn out to be what you thought it would be, and or was it more or less, or take that from?
I mean, what you learn is that Toronto is such a diverse place, and it's such a big place that no matter what you do, it's really hard to get everybody to agree. And my job is a citywide job. You know, the local councillors have their area to represent, and they will be very acutely, concerned about what their local people think. I have to represent all those local people and try and pull it all together. So when you're doing a transit plan, when you're addressing, all kinds of different issues, it's really, really challenging to try and find that sort of position or that roadmap that you take that you can get most people to buy into. And so I knew that before, but I've really learned it in spades now as I've got out across the city. And I spend a lot of time out across the city on a week-to-week basis, only because it's where you learn and it's where you figure that out, or you try to figure it out. But look, this is the most wonderful job in the world, this city. I mean, I just love the city. I think it is, one of the greatest places to live in the world, and that's, backed up by objective evidence. And so for me to go across the city and listen to people and try and figure out what we can do to make everybody as happy as possible, this is as good a job as you can get.
No, and you're relentless at it. Although, I have to, getting back to 4.5 hours sleep and then being all over the city, like, are you in close contact with your doctor? What does he think of 4.5 hours? And then do you eat properly? Are you always eating on the run? Or how do you balance all that with getting the work done?
Well, it's difficult, but I don't eat properly because, here's what happens. You go, for example, to an event at 6 o'clock at night and it finishes, say, at 8:30, quarter to 9. You don't eat at events because if you think about it, who looks good eating? So when you're having your chicken, have you ever seen anybody that looks good eating? And the answer is no, nobody does. So then you don't eat till 9 o'clock. You get home at 9 o'clock, and your instinct is not to start cooking something that's healthy.
Right.
You just eat something, and then you're not supposed to eat that late at night because you're going to bed.
Mm-hmm.
So it's tough that way. But look, If that's the worst problem you've got, and I fortunately have good health, so I hope it stays that way.
And how much time do you have during the year? Do you actually have? Do you schedule like 2 weeks holidays, or can you even do that as a mayor?
Well, you have to, because right. I don't think you'd maintain your mental health if you didn't take a bit of a break. So, look, we took our grandchildren skiing last March for a week, which was fantastic because I just loved to ski with them, and that was great. And I really haven't had any time off since, like since March. I've had probably 3 days off in total. Like, but that's the way it is. I mean, again, you know, you've got to be out there sort of doing things. We had a campaign on, obviously, but we're going away. Barb and I, we had our 40th wedding anniversary this year, so I managed to talk her into not having a trip at the time of our anniversary, maybe because the campaign was on, but that resulted in a promise being extracted that as soon as the election was over, we would go away. So we're going to do that for a week.
Well, good for you.
One of the big issues, a lot of people are aware of that, provincially, the number of councillors has been reduced. A couple of quick questions. What are your thoughts on the reduction and working with less people who have more responsibility? And since there's fewer counselors, would you be open to appointing Fred and I as special counselors to do something?
You know, you're on the latter point. Yes. You know, you're a good candidate, but I am looking seriously at a model for these community councils we had before that had a lot more counselors on them, for sort of Etobicoke and Scarborough and so on, at having some citizen appointees. So I will just tell you that I will keep those two names right up at the top of the list.
No, will you?
Wait a minute. I get the impression that's unpaid.
Yeah, now all of a sudden the interest is waning.
Oh, no, but, not for me it isn't, John, because what we're doing right now is virtually unpaid.
It's called public service.
Yeah, we heard about that.
Said all that. On the first part, you know, working with the council, look, it's my job. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, everybody listening, you know, has people they... you know, may not want to like, you know, may not like working with, and some others they do, and all this kind of stuff. It's no different in my job. And I think the people that got elected last night, the vast majority of them are people that I know we can work with to get transit built and address affordable housing and keep the taxes low, which are the things that I got a very broad mandate on. So, you know, we'll set about doing that, and we'll get as much done as we can, and I think we can get a lot done. So on we go.
Do you like the look of the other people that were elected, the councillors? Do you think you can work with these people? I heard this morning it was suggested that maybe this council, for the first time in a long time in Toronto, might actually lean a bit to the right. Is that true?
Well, I would say that, you know, look, these things are not supposed to be parties at City Hall, but the bottom line is there are councillors who are, they call themselves progressive councillors, and many of them are members of the NDP, and they tend to stick together, and I would say that they are in the minority at this point in time. Most of the rest of the people are just people that are there without partisanship, and are, you know, so I think the answer to your question is I think we'll get a lot done, and with their cooperation, too. I mean, look, they care about the same issues, housing, transit, and so on. There's just often a different route they want to take to get there, and my job is to try and pull it all together back to where we started and, you know, try and forge that consensus that represents the views of a very diverse population and a very big city. So that's my job as the leader of the council, and I'm optimistic everybody that's been sent down here, you know, really has the same objectives, and we just have to try and all pull in the right, in the same direction.
John, before, I know you've got a crazy schedule. We spoke to you a couple hours ago, and you've been on a bunch of different media outlets, and we just want to make this as easy for you as possible. Now, 4 years ago we talked to you, you got elected mayor, and that was something you'd wanted. And now in 4 years' time, or whenever it's time to do this again, would that be kind of the end of it for you?
Four years from now, I have, especially if we can maybe trade off this, you know, community council participation for one of you, I have visions of Humble and Fred and John. I mean, you get my drift here?
Oh, I'm getting it.
Oh, yeah.
You love this radio business.
I love radio, and I had so much fun doing it. I mean, it was work, as you well know, but it's fun. So, you know, I think Humble and Fred and John, and I notice I'm placing my name right at the end. I'm humble that way.
Mm-hmm.
So if you just want to keep that in mind, everybody's got to have a plan B, you know.
Well, listen, you're always welcome here, and thank you for being so kind to us with your time.
Always good to talk to you guys, and call anytime.
Thank
All right,
you.
My take care. There's John
Your
Tory.
Majesty. Thank you.
Majesty. Supreme Poobah, John Tory. Thanks, John.
Thanks, John.
There's John. Yeah.
And once again, the call did go to Freddie
Eisenberger. Eisenschminking.
because we thought we'd have him on too. Considering the superstation signal originates from Hamilton.
Now, is anyone getting what's going on here, though?
Waiting for the world to change.
By
John Mayer.
So we had John Tory, who's the mayor, John Mayer, waiting for the world to change, making
that's
changes.
Great. That's fantastic.
This is what's happening
that's
now.
Fantastic.
I'm like a mix master.
Eisen mixer.
Let's talk about Spearhead Brewing, my friend. Congratulations to the mayor of Toronto. Raise a toast to him.
Yes, with a bold 6% West Coast Pale Ale, brewed Hawaiian style. Yeah, with pineapple, but it's just a hint. It's a wonderful beer, I'm telling you. Unfiltered, dry hop to provide a delicate carbonation and complex flavor. Pale Ale is a fresh, citrusy character with hints of tropical fruit, as I mentioned. Zest and pine and refreshingly dry finish. Okay, that sounds almost complicated, but I'll tell you, it's a great description of this wonderful craft brew. That's what we're going to call it. Hawaiian Pale Ale. Enjoy it all year around from Spearhead Brewing Company out of Kingston, Ontario.
Everywhere you go, people want to know, what's your Wi-Fi situation?
Yo!
If you're like Phil's mom, she's in Cambodia with Phil's wife, or Phil's dada. On his way back to Vietnam one day.
Yes, for retirement.
We recommend GigSky. Make your mobile data make sense. How do you do it, Phil? Whether it's North America, Europe, or Asia, you go from country to country, and your data plan is all part of the same
SIM card.
Thank you.
Peace of mind, really, with one company when you go overseas. Use GigSky for very good price data and certainly no bill shocks.
You know, I mentioned yesterday, they've dropped their rates. And they were pretty inexpensive before. Now the regional plans for North America and Europe now include more options, plus 1 gig and 2 gig data plans costing $5 less than before. Get the SIM for free. Soon it'll be just standard operating procedure with the new Apple iPhone. In the meantime, there's the hotspot. If you go away with a bunch of folks, you get your hotspot, you get your data plan, and everyone can use your Wi-Fi, 32 connected devices on one hotspot. GigSky.com or go to HumbleAndFredRadio.com and find out more. We didn't have a lot of time with John because he's busy. But it was very nice of him. And it's always nice that he answers the phone. We did, for you people who don't know this, for quite a while, almost a year, I think, we were on with him when he was doing afternoons at News Talk 1010. Didn't we have like a regular once a week chat with him?
Oh, yeah, in the afternoons.
You guys were that. Remember, you would come back and.
Oh, right. Did he? Wow.
You would drive back.
That was ambitious.
I know. And we would meet at the studio.
Right.
The old studio. And we would go on through a broadcast line to his show.
Right.
I'm not sure if we were on the round table with him. I think that's what we did. We did a round table with him like once a week. But he was always so good with us.
Well, he's a special gentleman. He's a special man. You know, he ran Rogers. He was commissioner of the Canadian Football League. He's been involved with other companies. And he's a special breed. I can't relate to it. Like, hear what he said. 4.5 hours sleep.
4.5 hours
sleep. You would almost think
night.
That's not healthy.
No.
So 4.5 hours and then get home at 9 o'clock at night. Like, I'll tell you, one of those days would exhaust me. But I guess conditioning is a funny thing. That's his life, and he does it. And he wants to do it, even at his age. Not that he's an old man, but I'll tell you, it's just not everybody can do that. Not everyone would do that. So,
and I get the feeling that his affection for us is genuine. He's always been not just kind to us, but I think he likes doing
very warm, Howard.
Very.
Very warm.
And he doesn't have to
do
that.
Do you think Freddie Eisenberger will be that warm with us?
Well, we'll see. We'll see. But, I mean, John Tory picked up the phone this morning at 6:43 when we called him and was instantly, like, not aggravated. Like, you know, you think about all of a sudden two DJs call you.
You know what I think?
And he answers it.
No, I know. And when I think of him, he's in that car now. Mm-hmm. And he's got a folder, and he's looking at his day's agenda. And can you imagine what that involves? The people he's got to talk to, the things he's got to do, the issues he's got to address, the places he's got to be. like, I don't get it. I just don't. I can't relate to it. And I don't think I'm in the minority. I think most people would be like that. You'd be overwhelmed by it. Like, how do you do it?
Well, it's the definition of a self. And that's why I voted for him, because he is selfless. He doesn't need this gig. As we've said a million different ways, he doesn't need the money. He doesn't need the job. He certainly hasn't got the ego. He's got ego that wants him to be the guy in charge because he thinks he can make the difference as the guy in charge. Not because he needs to be, you know, he's not looking for the fame of it. His ego is about, I believe I can make a difference. Mm-hmm.
And even from that aspect, when you look at politicians, city politics might be a bit different, but how often does the guy really make a difference? Mm-hmm. Because you're always facing so many roadblocks. You know, opposition, people with different interests, people that just don't like you.
Incumbents, people who don't want to change.
Yeah, it's...
And did you hear what he said?
It's wowsy.
He's taken like 3 days off since March. Meanwhile,
right.
The Trumpelstiltskin, who did nothing but criticize Obama for taking time off to golf, has now taken 110 days off since he was inaugurated to golf.
What?
110 days with a cost of $62 million to the taxpayers. Mm-hmm. And you know what they do? These rallies, by the way, and what I'm about to tell you, all politicians, including great Obama, did this. But these rallies he goes to, what they often do is they have some kind of side meeting that's official business so that they can get the taxpayers to help pay for the rally as part of the president's, you know, he's actually doing some work in those towns, you know, like side stuff. Mm-hmm. But there's John Tory, who could just be swatting through his 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not taking as much time off as the president.
No, I know.
Here's what I would say. My only criticism, John Tory, stop trying so hard.
No, I know. And you're right. He's 3 days off since March, is what you said?
Yeah.
Well, we haven't had 3 days off since Sunday.
That's true. That's right. What? I can barely drag. I live upstairs and I can barely get down here. I'm tired already.
I know.
I'm just like, I don't.
That's what I mean. I don't.
Tired.
It makes me like he's
Tuesday.
The man has to be like super energized. It doesn't make sense. If I have a night where I toss and turn, I only get 4.5 hours sleep. I'm useless.
Right. Howard, I can't come in. I only got 5.5 hours sleep. Freddie, me too. I think we should just. Can we stop working Thursdays? Too much for we do 2.5 hours of diddly squat, and then we need to rest all day. Someone's been taking advantage of
Hi guys.
Of our Twitter feed
or text messaging platform.
Doc and Freddie P says, Bruce in Mississauga, thanks for continuing your awesome show, comma. I followed you, whatever platform you're on, period. Have helped make my day better. Hashtag FSerious. I wish we should start that. That should be our Twitter handle or whatever. We should start trending. FSerious. Hey, Sean. Have you done anything? Did we do anything with Sean today?
No, not yet.
No, remember, we wanted to talk about this story, the 34-year-old rapper who died.
Yes.
Canadian rapper. Okay. 34-year-old rapper fell to his death near Vernon, B.C. while performing a stunt that involved rapping while walking on the wing of a plane.
Right.
John James McMurray died Saturday filming a project he had been working on for months, a statement said. He trained intensively, apparently not intense enough. What happened? He went out on the wing and it caused the small Cessna to go into a downward spiral. So again, he gets out of the cockpit, he gets on the wing, and he was going to be dancing or something on the wing.
He was going to rap on the wing.
He was going to rap on the wing, and it sent the plane into a downward spiral. A pilot couldn't correct it. He held onto the wing too long. It was too late. By the time he jumped, the chute didn't have enough time. He died instantly. Like, that's just a crazy story. Like, wouldn't you know that? Not to walk on the wing of a Cessna while it's in flight? I mean, those things are just little tin cans. When I read this, I think that makes sense to me. That would imbalance the plane?
Yeah, I didn't know. Like, there's wing walkers that still fly in the air show circuit, and they're flying on specific. They're small planes, but they're
right.
They're planes
they're probably counterweighted or whatever.
But they didn't realize. So somebody didn't realize that when you went on the wing of a Cessna, it was probably going to turn into a spiral.
Mm-hmm. Now the plane landed safely, but rapper McMurray didn't make it, which must have been a horrible scene.
So I know that's more of a frequent thing out west. They do still stunt pilots and stunt plane flying. But I have a family friend that actually used to fly planes for this kind of stunt, and it's professionals that are doing that. You have to be an expert to even let someone get out of a
moving
plane.
No, for sure.
Obviously.
And I would assume that somebody said, hey, maybe we should... Do we really want to leave?
I know.
Do you want to, how important is the wrapping on the wing shot? Why don't we fake it?
Yeah, I mean, with green screens and everything nowadays, you don't need to do it.
Why?
You just don't need to do it. Just a crazy, tragic story. Somewhat amusing, though, I must say. But that's what makes the world go round. There's all kinds.
Mm-hmm.
This poor bugger died that way. Even if he had jumped a little sooner, apparently he would have been fine. But I guess he's going, should I not? Is it going to land? Can I just hold on? And
so his idea was to stay on the wing until it landed? Was he not going to get back?
Ah,
it's just, you know what?
We'll never know because we can't ask.
No. Sean, there's a bunch of stories. One I'm curious about is the danger of flushmate toilet.
Oh, yes.
The flushing system is in danger of bursting.
Yes, this FlushMate toilet system, it's a flushing system, prompted a massive recall because it's been actually blowing up and ruining houses and toilets and destroying the whole thing.
Yeah,
So they issued a massive recall. I know there's about, I think it said it's like over 17,000 people in Canada that use this.
Mm-hmm.
And... it's pretty massive. There, it's like $710,000 lawsuits going on, and they're going through some major stuff because this FlushMate toilet that I assume it automatically flushes. I couldn't find a video of it actually doing it.
It blows up houses?
It's been blowing up like the small bathroom because it sits in the back of the toilet.
Dumb.
And so it's been causing some serious damage to whoever's bought these.
So it's a machine that assists in getting...
In flushing and...
Sent out.
Yeah. Circulating the toilet.
Well, that's a public service you're providing there.
You
I'm
trying,
you know. To blow up.
Make sure you take your FlushMates back.
Yes.
Did you see the story? And I bet you Louis C.K. wasn't thrilled with this. Sarah Silverman came out yesterday and said that several times he requested that could he masturbate in front of her? And a few times she said yes, because she was sort of into it. She said, oh, this will be neat to watch. So he actually had, and this is when they were really young. Apparently they knew each other when they were very young. So he actually came out and asked her, can I do this? And she said yes a couple of times, being amused by it, maybe being turned on by it. I don't know. But what it does is actually confirm that obviously there was a history of this. The man enjoys being viewed well, you know.
Monkeying around.
Uh-huh. But I'm thinking yesterday, I bet, and she said this on the Howard Stern show.
Yeah, I heard her being interviewed.
Which was a huge audience. But I bet you he's thinking, what are you thinking? You're helping me. Like, do you think this helps?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you could have helped, you could have... And she said she's even had conversations with his daughters who are somewhat upset by this behavior. And then she turns around and tells a Stern audience this.
It's funny. I didn't hear
don't
that.
Do me any more favors, Sarah.
I heard her being interviewed yesterday. I really like her. I like her as a comic. I think she's really, really smart. I also think she's very attractive.
Yes.
But that behavior is just so weird. And I'm such a Louis C.K. fan. I don't even know what to think. It's like... You just wonder, is there something psychologically askew where you have this compulsion to do that?
Yeah. And why that?
I mean, I don't even like to do it in front of Stan. Okay, listen, Stan.
Stan gets the droopy eyes.
Dad, listen, Stan, Daddy's going to be busy, so you just stay out there. Did you guys see the picture of that iceberg, the rectangular iceberg?
Yes.
What is going on?
That's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool.
Why? What do you mean rectangular?
It's huge. Well,
like perfectly?
What, yes.
Look at
what
it.
What makes it's, this a story?
It's almost a perfect rectangle. It just broke off of... Is this the Arctic or the Antarctic?
Global warming.
That's Antarctica. Antarctica. Mm-hmm.
It's a monolithic slab of ice.
When it comes to spiritual enlightenment, Humble and Fred are the real deal. Deepak Chopra can kiss my ass.
Humble and Fred, brought to you by FYI Music News, The Retirement Sherpa, Gig Sky, The Chambers Plan, Spearhead Brewing Company, and Strain Print. Welcome back. You're listening to The Best of Humble and Fred. I'm Philip Pong, and we are continuing our series of the Humble and Fred memories. I've got a great library full of interesting interviews, and so this morning we're going to feature a wonderful comedian who's also a sportsman. His name is Paul C. Morrissey. Now The Best of Humble and Fred.
All right, please welcome to our program a young gentleman, started off in sports broadcasting, much like yourself, and has made a name for himself all across this continent and around the world. We're going to find out all about the goings-on of the very funny Paul C. Morrissey, everybody.
Oh, wow. Thank you, guys.
Hey.
Great to be here. Good morning.
What was the... When you were younger, you were just a big sports fan, and that was where you thought you were going to go, right?
Well, believe it or not, I played basketball. And people who can't see me, I'm very short and don't look like I can play basketball.
That's right.
So I grew up in a small town upstate New York, and my dad was a basketball coach. And so that's all I did is just like Hoosiers. I played every day, and I loved other sports, but I couldn't play anything. I was too small. But I was a good basketball player, and I ended up playing in college. I was all state in New York, and then... I wanted to play in the NBA, and they didn't want me, believe it or not.
Well, that is, you know what, that's, you know what that is? That's racist.
The worst thing was, the only offer I got was, I could have played in Ireland professionally, or for the Washington Generals, which is the team that gets beat by the Globetrotters every single game.
Yeah, but that's pretty good. If you were at a level where you were good enough to play for those guys.
Are you serious about the Washington Generals?
Oh, yeah. My college coach actually played for them. I had two of my buddies did it. And, it was basically... my friend who played said it combined my three favorite things. Shooting three-pointers, playing no defense, and traveling the world.
That's great. So, what were you?
I was a point guard.
Point guard, of course.
Yeah.
Because a small point guard, the NBA is like 6 foot two.
Yeah, it's become a cool to be the little guy now. You know, but when I was playing, it was like everyone I guarded was like 6 foot six. You know, I was like the really small guy.
So. You just go for their nuts, right? Mm.
How many people did you bang in the nuts? Just boom. The small point guard used to be. There was a few guys your size.
Yeah.
And now they're all just minimum 6'2", 6'3".
Now it's like everyone's eventually, because there's no centers either. There used to be like these 7 foot guys that played underneath. Now everyone wants to shoot three pointers. Everyone wants to do the. It seems like everyone plays the same position now.
Well, there was a time when those centers were all the guys that were close to 7 feet. Even back in the day, you know, Wilt Chamberlain, all they did was sort of lumber up the court, position themselves in that spot, and just wait for something to happen.
Yeah.
Well, you know, here in Toronto, Kyle Lowry is a point guard. He's about 6 foot one.
But yeah.
He just signed a deal for what? $31 million a year or something.
And he's amazing. He kind of jumped the next level. Mm-hmm. I follow all kinds of NBA. I went to the NBA Summer League this year, and he's a guy who went from like an average decent player to like all-star level now. I think you guys are happy to get him.
Do you regret your decision not to play with the Leprechauns of Ireland, where you would have been towering over them? We need a big man to go up the middle. Let's get the Paul C. Morrissey.
I do regret for show business purposes that I didn't play for the Washington Generals. Even for like just a summer tour, I would have loved to have done it. But it was just showed you how serious I took basketball at that point. I was like, I don't want to lose on purpose. I don't want to be a professional loser.
Do you think the Generals have ever conspired, got together, and thought, just once, let's beat them?
I knew.
You know?
Yeah. One of my buddies' dad played for them in like the 50s or early 60s. And I think it was kind of slow going. It was after Wilt had played for the Globetrotters and stuff. And I think they were losing the attention, and they were like, you know, one night they were just like, hey, if you guys can take him, go for it. And that's really all they were ever waiting for. And he said they completely choked. They lost worse than they ever played.
Really?
Well, there's great. For people who don't know, the Harlem Globetrotters, you know, they put on a show. But as a kid, you know, and they played this team, the Washington Generals. But as a kid, I didn't get it. I went, remember seeing them thinking, wow, they really are. Those other guys don't seem to know what they're doing.
I mean, it's a vaudeville show. It's got beats to it. It's really neat once you kind of step back.
It's like basketball wrestling.
Well, yeah. That's exactly what it's like. It's wrestling. Going in, if you know what the deal is, just sit back and enjoy it.
Yeah,
it's not a real game.
And they've tried to change it, I think, because now they did disband the Generals, or they made it not the regular team that they play, because the Globetrotters actually will play like college teams now, like Division I college teams, and because they are great players, but it's just they had the show that was part of the built-in thing. So.
Were the Generals all white guys too, or did they have some black guys?
Usually, I think that was the whole
crush those white men.
It's not like they were pushing it up the court with hoods on. They were just regular guys.
Well,
in basketball shorts.
Where are you going to find a bunch of guys that aren't that good that don't mind losing every day?
Exactly.
I love the fact that one of my favorite things about those guys, that was when they had the high shorts.
Yeah,
You know, if you look at basketball players in the 60s and 70s, they must look back at that and go, what were we thinking? Those shorts are ridiculous.
The Speedos of the basketball.
Well, same with tennis. Like McEnroe, you know, era with and Jimmy Connors, those cute little tennis shorts they wore.
I haven't seen that movie, The Battle of the Sexes. Have you guys seen it yet?
No, I hear it's good. The Bobby Riggs.
I just remember him, like, because I do a joke about, you know, the base coaches are always like retired baseball players that are out of shape in their 50s and 60s, and like they're still putting them in the uniform. It's like, just let them wear a suit or something. Yeah. And that's what I remember Bobby Riggs, even the clips of him, he was trying to wear like those shorts that like athletic players would play, and he was like had no business wearing
that,
them.
That old Bobby Riggs, that was brilliant what he pulled off back then.
Really? And who's the guy that plays Bobby Riggs in the movies?
Steve Carell.
Carell.
Yeah. I guess he's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. He's got. They make him. He's become. There's another movie he's starring in. I just saw the trailer for. He's interesting how he changes his look. Yeah. The guy he played in that wrestling movie was frightening.
Yeah.
What's that movie? You liked it? I thought of
Foxcatcher.
Foxcatcher.
Yeah.
That was great.
It was a little bit creepy.
Yeah.
Paul C. Morrissey is the voice hanging out in our studio. Paul has a website.com, which is hilarious.
Easy to remember.
Easy to remember. Paul has a website.com in town at Absolute. This is the old Uptown Club at Young and Eglinton. And his TV special, A Real Humdinger, is coming out in November. There's lots to catch up with about your life, your career. So you went from being a sports guy, and you moved to New York to do stand-up. At the same time, you were pursuing a master's degree at NYU, which is what you do, you know, while you're hitting mics every night.
Well, I mean, the sports thing happened basically out of, you know, not being able to play, but still wanting to be involved in basketball. I actually was an assistant college coach for a year, and then I got into TV, and that was when Dan Patrick, Keith Olbermann, like, oh, ESPN, you can be funny. So I got a job. Luckily, I got like an on-air job in Northern California covering the Raiders and the Sacramento Kings and stuff. And they didn't want me to be funny. I didn't realize that they were a real news station and took themselves serious.
Well, where did the message get lost? Like, you latched on or applied thinking you could be funny?
Well,
it never came up?
Yeah, it was. Well, the thing was, I could be funny with sports and still take it seriously because I liked it.
Right.
But the other part of the job, you would have to do news like 2 days a week.
Oh, I see.
Right, yeah.
And they want to send me to like a shooting. I was like, if a guy is shooting a gun, I don't want to go anywhere near there. Like, I don't care if I'm
crossfire.
You want me to take videotape of a guy shooting a gun? No way. Or a car accident? No, people are dead. I don't want to go anywhere near there.
You're like, I don't want to talk about line scores.
No, I would just go to the mall and ask people about the next holiday and basically do like funny man on the street, like Daily Show stuff at a real station.
Right.
And
it's funny you say that. I went through the same thing because when I started,
I started
doing sports right from the beginning. I wanted to have fun with it, but then I'd have to midday read newscasts, and it was just so hard to read that.
Where
stuff.
At NY?
Oh yeah, at the AM station. Check.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah,
I would have So I'd go from doing that in the morning and then having to read these serious newscasts, and it was like, it was horrible.
Yeah, it was a weird thing because, well, Rich Eisen went from my station right to ESPN. So that was the buzz, like, oh, you can go anywhere from here.
Mm-hmm. And, from Sacramento.
It was Chico, California was where I was. And that, nice. That Aaron Rodgers played in high school there. Mm-hmm. And I covered also Ricky Ray, who was a big stud out here for the Argonauts, right?
And he does now.
He still does?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That makes me feel old.
And he's having a great season.
Actually, it makes me feel young because he's still playing.
So Ricky Ray was a big sort
he's
of a
from
college
Shasta, kid? Shasta College. He went to this little junior college in Northern California. And that was the funny thing is like Aaron Rodgers came out of Chico, Ricky came out of, and if you go to, everyone would say Aaron Rodgers probably has the better career.
Oh, you think?
But if you,
than Ricky Ray?
Yeah, slightly. Although it's funny how that works, but go ahead.
But go to, if you go to Wikipedia, all-time passing yards, Ricky Ray is right behind Johnny Unitas.
Yeah.
Number, like top 10.
You know what the funny thing is? When guys come out of colleges, they're identified whether they're an NFL-style quarterback, and then if they're not, a lot of them come to the CFL. Right. Ricky Ray just wasn't built for the NFL.
Yeah, I think they had him in that 49ers camp because he was a Northern California kid. Mm-hmm. Even Aaron Rodgers went to a junior college, Butte College, for like 2 years before The people at Cal thought, well, this guy's got something.
There was a time, Paul, when I think it was the early 70s, mid 70s, when U.S. college players would come to, or professional players would come to Canada.
Oh, really?
Because they were paying similar money. Who's the...
Joe Theismann.
Joe Theismann.
Oh, right.
Jim Stillwagon. That running back... from the St. Louis Cardinals came here. God, how do I not remember his name? Terry Metcalf.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he left St. Louis to come to the Toronto Argonauts because they paid him more money. Those days are over, though.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I was a huge Flutie guy, so I always wish that he got a better handshake. You know, even the Bulls kind of screwed, or the Bills screwed
him. The Bills
him
totally
over.
Screwed him.
Yeah.
Rob Johnson, come on.
No, yeah, we've had that discussion a bunch of times. How did Rob end up?
I feel like that's a curse. I honestly feel like when he got him to the playoffs, I think that was the Music City Miracle game.
Yes, it was. Lost. 1999.
And I was like, they haven't had any luck since
then.
Nope.
Paul C. Morrissey's with us. So you had gone to, you went from Northern California, you go to New York to do stand-up, but at the same time you hedge your bet by getting a degree in what?
Well, I got my master's in English education.
Interesting.
My dad was a teacher, retired teacher. My sister's a teacher. And it's something I always thought I could do. And with comedy, you never know. Like, you get into this thing a couple years later, and you're like, oh, I've got no backup plan at all. And it was also a great way to afford to live in New York City at the time. So take out a few loans, go to school during the day, do shows at night. But it ended up being the greatest place ever because, you know, that's Louis C.K., Jim Gaffigan, who I ended up working a lot with, Tom Papa, who I do a podcast with now. So that was like Louis C.K., all these prime time just to see all
so
those
who
guys.
Were you, so who were your peers? That's what I wanted to get to. Are those the guys that you sort of started off with, or were they well down the
yeah,
road
those are the guys that were...
Like Tom Pop has been around a long time.
Yeah, all those guys have been around, and guys that when I started it, I looked up to, and now just getting to work with those guys is amazing. You know, it's just, I opened for Louis C.K. last year. And
during his 2017, that Netflix special, the 2017 shows?
Yeah, well, he had just decided to wear a suit.
Right.
Because, I don't know if you know, like Letterman... When you do stand up on there, that's the one time that you wear a suit if you've never worn a suit before.
Are you told or you just know that?
I think you just know. I think they imply it.
Yeah.
And Louis was famous enough where he didn't have one, but every time he would come on, Dave would say, thanks for dressing up, Louis.
Although Carlin never wore a suit, like the last.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, obviously, we're talking about that's legendary.
That's a different
super,
level.
Super, superstar.
I want to talk about that because we've had conversations on the show. I've known a few people that back in the day got to go on Carson. And so you go to New York, you do stand up, you get good enough, and you actually got to do something that a lot of comics, you know, of our generation would have been mind-blowing, which is going on Letterman and doing your act.
Yeah.
So what is that? What's that moment like where you're behind the curtain? You've got your 7-minute set or 6 minutes, and your mind's got to be just It's got to be mind-blowing knowing that you're about to be introduced by someone you looked up to like I do. And just describe that backstage. What is it like? What time do you get there? What is it? What's the buzz like?
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing is, like, there's this whole process to it that, like, people don't even really know. Because, obviously, you know, you've always wanted to get on there, and for whatever reason, I got either get turned down or it doesn't work out. And I think I'd sent something, and, like, 9 months later, you get, like, a random email, like, hey, we kind of like the set. We need one more minute of something that's related to this part. You know, it's basically like putting together a hit song, kind of, you know? You're like...
So they actually worked with you and said, hey, Paul, we like what you're doing, but you need to fix this part here, and then you'll have a nice six-minute spot.
Yeah, it's oddly enough, my sports segment was 4 minutes and 50 seconds, and that's exactly how long Letterman was. So, down to the second. And, like, you know, from working in TV or mm-hmm. this, your brain kind of clicks on these segments of
you
time that you're used to.
Yeah.
So, and that was the great thing about doing it. I'd done the Craig Ferguson show, and that wasn't too stressful because you're working in a studio where I've been in the studio by myself. It's great to have an audience there. Mm-hmm. I was just making the cameraman laugh for all those years.
So that recruitment for Letterman, so Carson used to be, they'd send somebody.
Yeah, Jim McCauley was the famous guy I used to see at the Comedy Store.
So your recruitment, you actually send them stuff in, and then they go through?
Yeah, I think just a... pedigree-wise, like, I'd done Craig Ferguson.
Right.
I'd gotten to do it 4 times, which was, like, one of the most of any comic because, you know, Craig could fill the time just playing with his tie, you know, later on. But in the beginning, they would have, like, a guest fall out, and I would get called. I mean, literally got called at 11 o'clock one day and did the show at 2, which is, like, kind of unheard of. And that was just your whole... you know, always have a set ready. You know, always have a 5-minute clean spot that you can do on TV that you're excited about.
Well, late Ralphie May talked about that. He said, you know, if you're going to write clean, because you don't, you're writing jokes, and Seinfeld said this, if you're writing jokes you can't do on TV, you're kind of wasting your time.
If that's what you want to do. I mean, I've tried to, you know, just in the last few years, like, I mean, I'm lucky enough where I do these theater shows I've done with Jim Gaffigan and now with Tom Papa, and you know, that's a clean theater audience, but it's a great audience.
Yeah.
And if your jokes are funny, you know, and I talk about food a lot, so you don't necessarily have to use the F word or anything too
dirty. Well, Ralphie said an interesting thing. He said, if you write clean, you can make it dirty. But mm-hmm. if you write dirty, it's hard to make it clean.
Yeah, that's what I find, because, you know, I'm a comedian. I'm not offended by anything. So, you know, once you kind of learn, like, oh, these are kind of hot spots for some people who, you know, is it worth one joke to, you know, peeve people off, you know, one or two people, or just do it? So, I mean, I've always... You know, that's, and I learned that lesson. I showcased when I was, to answer your question, I showcased for the Craig Ferguson show, and I just had all these, you know, about my car and about this store and about that store. And they're like, those jokes are great, but they're all sponsors' names. You can't
oh, they're all
use,
brand names.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So you kind of learn all these things, and then, you know, and then when you get a chance to do the show and you've run it, you know, 40, 50, 60 times in a month, and then, you know, when you fly to Letterman, you're ready to go. The experience was great.
Well, talk to us about, you said there's a process. You get there in the afternoon, somebody, you sit there and waiting. Like, all that stuff must freak you out.
Well, the freakiest part is, so I'm doing it, you know, all the years I was in New York, and I got one showcase, and they said, you know, you need to be more, you know, animated or something. It was weird notes or whatever. And then these producers were like, we love the tape. Because I was living in L.A., and then just fly in, you know, and on Monday we'll come see you, just make sure there's no notes we have. And then, so that's the nervous part, because you're showcasing for them for the first time on a Monday night at some club in New York, and you're just hoping there's not some crazy bachelorette party or something that's going to ruin your Letterman set.
Yeah, you're about to go in and probably one of the biggest breaks you've ever had, and there's a bunch of, you know, people in there yelling at you, and they're having a party, and it doesn't go well. But did you literally fly in to showcase and then do Letterman that week?
No. Like, basically, they already said, yeah, we got you. You're booked on the show. We're just going to see you on this night. And, of course, you as a comic, you're thinking, what can go wrong?
Yeah.
And so that actually went well. Then you run the set a couple more times just to make sure you're feeling great about it. And that, you know, that can always, you know, I think it was Daniel Tosh did Letterman. And then, you know, because they tape a little bit early, and then did a spot at Dangerfields, which is kind of like a touristy kind of weird place. And I guess he just bombed at Dangerfields, like, after he did Letterman the same night. So he already is feeling bad about himself.
So that moment, you hear the voice of David Letterman. And what does he say? Something like, please welcome making his...
Well,
what's he say about you? And then, and what is the moment when you walk out and there's Letterman and Paul and the band and the Ed Sullivan Theater and the music's playing?
Well, the other cool thing is the Paul Schaefer's band, who's those guys are the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame band, I think. You can pick the song that they play when you come on. That's the one thing I don't know if anybody ever talked about.
And you picked?
I picked Warren Zevon, Lawyers, Guns, and Money.
Excellent.
I thought that was a great, you know, because Warren had all these great spots on the show, and I know the band really liked it, so...
It's a great song.
I picked that out, but Regis Philbin's the guest before I go on, and... you know, I'm getting ready, getting going, and then I see the two producers looking at me like somebody just died. You know, I was like, what's going on? And then, like, you know, I think we're going to, they just decided, you know, we're going to have to push it to a later date because Regis talked too long. So they had decided, like, in the middle. So my parents are in the audience.
Oh, my gosh.
There's a commercial break, and they're telling me, and I'm not mad or anything. I'm just kind of stunned. I'm like, okay, I'm not the producer. It's your show.
Are you relieved a little bit? You're like, okay, I don't have to do this now.
And you know that can happen, right?
Not really.
Oh, you didn't?
It was funny because my buddy Moody McCarthy had been bumped on the show, but it hadn't happened in a long time because these producers worked at the show, and they kind of, you know, they fly me in from L.A., and... You know, but they do it old-fashioned show business. Like, we're taping one show, and if you don't make it, then we'll just bring you back. And so Dave gets on, and I'm listening to this for the first time, too. And he's like, we apologize. Regis talked too long. We had this great young comic. Paul Morrissey's going to be on. And so we'll have Paul back, and held up my CD. And, like, it was almost a better thing because he basically, like, said, this guy's great. He's going to be on the show. Because even when you tell your friends, you're going to, hey, watch Letterman tonight. They're like, yeah, right.
We'll see. That's right. Yeah. Why?
So when he actually said that, you know, that, you know, he apologized. But like you said, it kind of made it like almost a dry run. Like I flew in, did all the
got busy nervous,
work stuff,
did all the business, ran your sets.
Got the suit, got everything, and, you know, it did everything but the show. So then the next time you kind of know what
to
expect.
Us some timeline. That was in what time of the year?
It was June.
And when did you get back on the show?
Well, here's the thing. So... they say we don't have a date right now, but as soon as there's a spot, we're going to have you on. And then the next week, I get back to L.A., and I see David Letterman announces his retirement.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And at that time, you didn't know, like, he was going to do it, like, the next year or whatever. Right. I thought I was just done.
You're like, super.
So then I kind of like, you know, it was a nervous week for me. And it was funny enough, I went back to L.A. and I just did the Johnny Carson Festival with Drew Carey. He hosted it. And he knew I was going to do Letterman. And he's like, hey, how'd it go? And I said, actually, I got bumped by Regis Philbin. And he was like... He's like, Regis Philbin. And he told me the same exact thing happened to him with the Johnny Carson show. He wanted to thank him one last time. And, like, Regis is
it
bugging
was Regis.
Him.
Oh, yeah. He Regis was, won't shut up.
And he was bugging him from the time Johnny even signed off for the show to, like, guest host or something. He just wouldn't leave him alone.
Right.
And so Drew didn't even end up getting to talk to Johnny Carson after the show.
So how soon did you get to go back and do your spot?
So it ended up being about a month, but... because of that, I ended up being like the last new guy to debut because from there on out, they were getting all the big guns and Ray Romano. And, you know, me and Norm MacDonald talked about this because he was the very last guy.
Yeah, that was a great spot. That spot, if you haven't seen it, it's Norm MacDonald on the last Letterman show does a set. And then at the end of his set, stops and does about a minute, 20 seconds sort of heartfelt thank you to David Letterman. It really is something else. And Norm MacDonald starts to choke up.
Yeah, he does. Dave keeps them together. But the set is like, you know, I think that was the one about a bunch of Germany, like Germany against the world.
No, that's right. The bit was, he said, in Germany, they lost World War One, but they keep attacking the world. hey, so quickly, we got to go. Tell us about the last that set. So you got on.
Got on, get signed by Ray Romano and Brian Regan's manager, and David Letterman said my name. That's a successful career.
So you didn't talk to him at do panel?
Well, he did shake. He shook my hand.
Now, what does he say when he comes over and shakes your hand?
Well, we always study what he says, and by what he said, I know that he liked my set. And I did hear him cackle a couple times, and they told me what jokes he liked. So that's...
So what did he whisper to you?
He said, thanks for coming back, because they told him I had been bumped. So that was kind of funny.
Did Mom and Dad get to see that one?
Yeah, they got to see that one, too. So that was a fun story.
He's a good boy. Paul C. Morrissey.
This is Humble and Fred.
There's more to the Best of Humble and Fred from the week. I'm full of Pong. This is the Best of Humble and Fred on air and online.
We're back with the second hour of the Best of Humble and Fred, brought to you by FYI Music News, The Retirement Sherpa, Geek Sky, The Chambers Plan, Spearhead Brewing Company, and Strain Print.
My mama told me
it's Humble and Fred Radio. You're listening.
Humble and Fred Radio
to the legendary Humble and Fred Show.
HF Stink. Right now, our text screen is down. I've sent a note to text screen engineer Ian Service from Credible Goat and what's the name of his company?
TS2.
Ian, what's the name of your company?
TS2.
Rome Phone.
Why do I send money to TS2?
Maybe that's a shell company. Huh. I don't know. This program brought to you by the Chamber Plan.
Here's what we want to do. If you own a small company and you've often thought about, you know, getting into some kind of a benefits plan for your employees, a thank you, a gesture for their security, go to chamberplan.ca, get a free quote. It's Canada's number one plan for employee benefits, the Chamber Plan, Canada's leading group benefit plan for firms with, say, you know, 100 employees and less, very small, and then up to that number. Great idea. 30,000 Canadian businesses now part of this. They've been around for 40 years. It's fantastic. Group benefits, including health and dental and travel and all sorts of products inside once you have a good look. Okay, chamberplan.ca. Get yourself a quote. It's the way to go.
Hang on. We did a lot of reggae music yesterday. That was cool. I'm just trying to find... there it is. Right now, Phil's mom is visiting Phil's sister. Phil's wife. I know. Easy now. If Phil's mom wants to visit Phil's sisters, she would just come home. She's visiting Phil's wife. Phil's wife lives in Cambodia. And Phil's mom and wife went over to Vietnam, you know, as you do. And all the while, they're secure in the knowledge that their data is being streamed properly, cheaply, and effectively using GigSky. North America, Europe, Asia, and all kind of new plans. Flexible, and the number of countries with LTE services increased. As well, GigSky has reduced the price of some of their most popular plans and added more data to other plans. For instance, North America and Europe
Regional plans now include more options plus 1 gig, 2 gig data plans, and they're costing less than before. Get the hotspot. You know, you can connect 32 people to one hotspot. You're just like a walking Wi-Fi zone. As well, the SIM is free and soon to be included in new Apple iPhone products. GigSky.com. Go to HumbleAndFredRadio.com and click on and get through. Sabrina Soares is returning to our program. Young singer-songwriter. So impressed us a month ago. She was here as part of a music program. And we asked her to come back when she has her new single. She'll be performing here in the next hour or so. You were going to show me something. You said, "Oh, I'll wait till I." Something about Fox.
You said, no! I thought you were going to talk about Austin Matthews.
Yeah, I'm going.
Oh,
to.
No! I just thought of maybe later if we did a little first day of cannabis recap. There was a couple of stories in the news.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
And we'll get to that.
And it deals with that.
Let's just quickly. So this Austin Matthews kid, just to give you some perspective, the last time anyone. You know, there are very few 60 and 70 goal seasons. You know, I'd forgotten about Brett Hull. Brett Hull scored, was it 90?
No. 92 was Gretzky. And I think next to that.
Yeah, 86 goals in 1991 was Brett Hull.
How many?
86.
Really?
I'd forgotten about that.
Right.
Because you don't think of him.
No, but in the 80s, it was pretty common to go over 50. Now it's. It's a big achievement in the NHL to hit 50, which is sort of sad.
But isn't it interesting? Because when I was looking at this article, I was like, oh, yeah, Brett Hull. But to your point, what were you saying? There, from 1981 to 1994, every player who led the NHL in goals had 60 or more.
Mm-hmm.
From 88 to 93, no goals leader had fewer than 70.
Mm-hmm. And what is it from then on?
So, but it's I was going to say, since they started awarding something called the Rocket Richard Trophy to the goal-scoring champion, in 99, they started that in 1999, Alec Ovechkin and Steve Stamkos, have you heard of Steve Stamkos? The only winners to register 60 or more. So it's only happened a couple times. Now,
when was that?
In 2008 and 2012.
Oh, right. Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Since they started awarding this
President's Trophy.
So,
or no, what did you call it?
Rocket Richard,
President's most points by a team.
To this kid, now, Austin Matthews, last year in a 64-game season, he scored how many?
38, 39.
Right. That would have put him on a pace for 60 goals.
Right. In his rookie season, he scored 40.
Right.
And he missed a few games in that season,
as a 19-year-old.
Right.
Now as a 21-year-old, he is on pace to score a ridiculous amount. But
well, he has 10 goals in 7 games, so that would be 70... 80, around 80. Yeah.
So realistically, is it, they're now in this article's point, and this is a USA Today, saying that he could be in the 60s easily.
Oh, I think so. Like, Leafs have played 7 games. I think only 1 game he didn't score a goal in. I think most of those games he's got at least 2 points in. He's just one of those guys that the puck follows him around, or, you know, he just seems to know where it's going. But, I mean, we've talked about that before. He's a special talent. And understand that, you know, his line mates, Kasperi Kapanen now, is sort of like a consolation to William Nylander. So he's also one of those players that makes those around him better.
Like a lot of great players.
Yeah.
Ed Olchuk, Eddie Olchuk scored 42 goals in 1987. Like, in those days, you would be like the second line center. You'd score 40 goals.
Well, Rick Vive, I think, had 350 goal seasons with the Leafs.
Olchuk says that I love this phrase. Uncanny anticipation is what separates Matthews from his peers. They said the same thing about Gretzky. And the same thing happened to guys that played with Gretzky. In the year that Gretzky scored 212 points, I don't know this for a fact, but I guarantee you his line mates had record seasons as well.
Well, this is, you know, you bring William Nylander into this as well. Now they're talking about a bridge contract, where instead of long term, what you do is you sign for 2 or 3 years, maybe at a reduced rate, but over those 2 or 3 years, you prove that you're worth the money you're asking for. And here's the dilemma he's in. He signs a bridge contract, say, at $5.5 or even $6 million. You're coming to play, because we already know he will be on Austin Matthews' line. So over those 2 or 3 years on your bridge contract, you're playing with one of the best players in the league. It's only going to make your numbers explode. And what does that do for you the next time your contract comes up? Now you have a track record. You know, William Nylander only has a couple of seasons to draw from. There's not enough of a sample there to give him that kind of money. Mm-hmm. But you come back for a couple, play with Austin, rack up a bunch of points, you're in the driver's seat.
And now to bring it full circle, let's check some more boxes. Let's unpack and pivot. Unpacking and pivoting.
Pivoting.
So here's what I would ask you. Given what we've been talking about, what Tavares is making, $15 million, and what Nylander wants.
$11 million. Well, no, it's average. I'm going by the average. He's got 77 over 7 years.
Okay, but...
Yeah, it's front-loaded. Yes.
Okay, so okay, it's, he's 15.9 this year.
Okay.
So I would ask you, whenever Austin Matthews, who, as you mentioned earlier, you have to play 7 years in the league before you're a free agent.
Yeah.
But Austin Matthews has had to sign a rookie contract.
Right.
Entry contract. So what's the number when that entry contract expires?
Which is next summer.
So what's that going to
cost? Well, it can't be any more than 12, 5, or 13. It can't be.
Per year?
Yeah. I mean, it could be. He could get $25 million a year, but he's going to play on a lousy team. The Leafs aren't going to give that contract because there's not enough money to go around. See, this is the corner that the NHL has backed themselves into with this salary cap.
Mm-hmm.
It actually penalizes you for good recruiting and acquiring good players. Because think about it. Say you have a half a dozen really good players, and you've got to pay them. Well, then your support staff, you can pay them next to nothing.
Right.
Or, in the case of a lot of players like Pittsburgh and Chicago, you have these great players, you have to trade them because you can't afford to fit them all under the cap.
Yeah.
So a guy like Austin Matthews goes, yeah, I would like $20 million a year, but if I want to play in a good team and have a chance of winning the Stanley Cup, I got to take less so there's more money to spread around other players.
Which is your point about Sidney Crosby.
Yeah. So.
This is brilliant. Here's how great Ian's service is. About 5 minutes ago, Freddie and I checked our page, and it wasn't working. I sent a note to Ian. Now it's working. And here's this text. He goes, I love that the commercial had two high-profile NHL players. We're talking about Sidney Crosby at the drive-thru.
Yes.
And Fred's friends are all like, oh, yes, Fred. Everything Fred says. Well, why don't you read it?
He says, I love that the commercial had two high-profile NHL players at a drive-thru at a rural Tim Hortons on a Zamboni. And Fred says the unrealistic part is the order of two double-doubles.
See?
That's Adam in Mississauga.
Adam knows sink-a-fat.
That's funny. Get that's it? A great observation.
Sink-a-fat. It is. Because you don't suck up and brown nose.
Right.
You know, sicko.
Huh? All those guys you were saying, what'd you guys think? And they're all like, oh, Fred, incredible. Well, that is really funny. Like, yeah, the unrealistic part is that they're ordering double doubles, which, by the way, I have never ordered. Even when
neither have I.
Really?
Yeah, when I drank coffee with milk and sugar in it, I was never I couldn't do the double. It was too sweet. And ever since Tim's brought forth the dark roast, it's not bad.
It's not bad. I haven't had sugar in my coffee since I was a kid.
Really?
Yeah.
I began with a quad.
When we first started working together, I had cream and sugar.
Did you? I've always had a little half and half, but
Dan Duran was the first one who said, you know, coffee tastes very good on its own, the coffee.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right. But then, you know, eventually you grow up and black coffee is what you drink.
Yeah.
Well, you have a little cream, I know, on the weekends.
A little treat. What I don't like in my coffees is Bailey's.
The Irish coffees. Jeez.
I don't know.
Remember when people used to drink Spanish coffee? Like it was this big after-dinner drink, and they would bring you the fancy cup with the sugared rim.
Yeah, what is it you put in an Irish coffee?
Well, Spanish or Irish. It's some kind of liquor.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But you remember the Spanish was the thing, you know, in the 90s, you'd go up for a fancy dinner, and you'd have a Spanish coffee after, and it was just more booze in coffee.
Right.
Yeah. Ugh.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never been one for Bailey's and coffee. Do you like that?
Not really. I mean, it's been a long time, so I don't really remember.
I don't care to get a buzz at 8 o'clock in the morning either.
Right.
Oh, yeah, that thing. When people do that in the morning, well, that's just...
Well, yeah.
I've done that.
For brunch.
I thought you were talking about a Bailey's and coffee after dinner.
Oh, no, no, no. That's cappuccino time. Come on.
Oh, okay. Well, I was out for hipster dinner last night with our friend Jeff Lumby and his lovely, lovely wife, Julie. And, of course, girlfriend Rachel. And Lumby had a coffee after dinner. It was like 8 o'clock at night. And he's been, you know, he's been doing mornings as long as we have. And I said, I can't have a coffee. He goes, do you want one? I go, no, I can't have one. I won't sleep. He's like, he starts bugging me, right? Because, oh, you won't sleep. I go, dude, you got up at 3:30 in the morning like me for our whole lives. I could never drink coffee in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
What I do in the evening, of course, is some mild medications.
No, I'll have a cappuccino when I'm out.
Come on. Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
but it doesn't affect me that way either.
Oh, you mean the caffeine doesn't affect you?
Yeah, it doesn't really. Takes a lot to keep me up. You know.
Especially now.
Well, a good burn will keep you up.
Yeah.
Real burn.
I'm trying to segue to the first day of cannabis being legal. You see, medications. Mm-hmm. And I had also written down, you know, the fallout from the first day of weed being legal in Canada. There were a few things. What's the thing you wanted to point out about? Was it Fox News?
Yeah, last night I'm watching. I made a big mistake here. I was reviewing my account with Rogers. My credit card got compromised, okay? And then I pay it on my credit card, so I had to call in and do that. And then we started talking about my thing, and I found out that I had this sort of a complimentary channel. And for some reason, it was the family channel. I said, well, that can't be right. I wouldn't ask for the family channel. I'm upset.
Oh,
no, I wasn't. Anyway, he reviewed what was available, and he said the Fox News channel. And I said, okay, give me that. For amusement reasons.
Anyway, for entertainment.
Well, wait a second. When Fox News, is that different than Fox?
It's what you hear.
Right.
I thought you already Sirius, not on TV.
Oh.
No, no. So I'm watching Tucker Carlson last night, and I don't know if you know, he's a right-wing. Years ago, he used to be on CNN on a show called Crossfire and always wear a bow tie.
Oh, yes.
When he was like a child. Anyway, he often gets into arguments on a show and as often as not loses the arguments. And when he does, he starts talking over his guest and then laughing at them in this sinister, creepy little laugh that he has. Mm-hmm. But last night, he does his take on cannabis being legalized in Canada. He says the reason they're doing it in Canada, and this is coming to the United States as well, because the young people in Canada are having trouble getting jobs. They've been priced out of the housing markets. So this is the government's attempt to keep them half-baked so they don't complain a lot. This is what he said. And he looked in the camera and said it and actually was debating with another guy who was making sense, saying, you know, using if alcohol is legal, why wouldn't weed or anything you say about weed can be applied to alcohol? And then at that point, Tucker Carlson's, you know, that creepy little laugh.
Are you talking about this laugh? Hold on. That's not it. Hold on. Come on.
Adorable.
One last piece to Tucker's laugh.
Every year, the Best Friends Animal Society helps cats and dogs who are stuck in animal shelters.
I thought this was a whole compilation of him laughing. I apologize.
But anyway, he said that, and he said it's coming to the United States, too, because more and more young people will want to rise up. You know, against not being able to afford homes or get jobs. So this is the government's way of, yeah, give them pot and they'll just be quiet. You know, they'll just be half-baked all the time and we won't have to worry about them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why we did it.
And he is convinced that once it's legalized, more people will do it and more people will have a problem with it. And claiming he had all sorts of statistics to back that up, which I think the statistics I've seen are just totally counter to that.
Yeah.
But well, at the very least, we don't know.
Well, you said yesterday in the state of Colorado, it's like, what, 3%?
Oh, no, I said 3% of those people registered places.
I'm sorry. Okay, so continue.
More than 90% of the people still buy it where they always bought it. No, that's basically it. This is what he said. And, it's typical Fox News. I mean, they lean to the right, and they're holier than thou, and they're self-righteous, and anything out of the norm is wrong. And it was just sickening. And, he would be, I don't know, maybe 50?
No.
In his 40s?
No. Yeah, I would say...
Really?
Early 40s.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He's too young to be that old.
But it just seems odd. And then, you know, to their credit, and to be fair, sometimes, you know, these aren't news shows. They're opinion shows. And often they say things to get...
To get a reaction.
To get a reaction.
He's 49 years old.
Okay. So...
So his job is to be firebrand, basically.
Well, yesterday, he did it to me. Although I just laughed. I was shaking my head going, really? Like, again, it gets back to that integrity thing. Even if you don't feel that way and you're saying it to get a reaction, what a stupid thing to say.
Yeah.
But oh, on some level, he may believe it. So.
Well, anyway. I think it comes down to whether he believes it or not. It's good television. He takes that stance. He may not even personally believe that.
But no, that's what I'm saying.
But even if it's just, hey, tonight I'm going to take this point of view and I'm going to argue with somebody because it'll be good for our base and all that other blah, blah, blah. The irony of it, though, is if there was a country, and I sort of touched on it with you and I talking before the show, if there was a country that has systematically and systemically kept their poor peoples down, it's that nonsense machine. Like alcohol, you know, I think I can't remember if you were here or we were talking about this with Skeezes, but, you know, we're so used to, and I'm not just saying this because I don't drink, but we're so used to seeing advertising for alcohol equate alcohol with the good times of your life, which is great. In moderation, it's fine. Mm-hmm. But the reality of alcohol, and we're basically saying life is better when you're drinking because it's alcohol and football, alcohol and hockey, and all your activities. So how is that any different than if you were to see an advertising of somebody saying, you know, life will be better, you'll enjoy the hot wings more if you're a bit high. But once that, you know, that is, we're so used to in our society that alcohol is all pervasive. We just talked about, you know, the Baileys and coffee in the morning, the Spanish coffee after dinner. Alcohol is all, we're so used to it that anything under the ordinary, now it seems so amazing.
Mm-hmm. No. That's right. And guys like this, it's just hard for them to get their head around it. I mean, and not, how many states is it legal in right now? Five, six?
I think at least that. California, Colorado.
Right, around a dozen, because there's a bunch who just approved it.
What's your point?
And the world has an end. Like, why don't they use that as an example rather than, you know, they look north and, oh, look what Canada's done now. You know, they're going to ruins and that flaky country to the north. When all they have to do is look at the states that have legalized it in their own country and recently, and I don't think there's been any calamities.
Yeah. Well, unlike alcohol, you know, and anyone that says marijuana is a gateway drug is just nonsense.
Right.
Alcohol ruins way more lives than marijuana. I'm not talking about oxy and heroin and coke. And like, hard drugs are bad. Let's just say that. We all know that. Let's not be children. I do, before we go to our break, though, I want to tell you an interesting statistic that was told to me yesterday.
Right.
About this industry of cannabis.
Okay. Are you going to tell me now?
I don't know. Do you have any more to talk
about? Oh, yeah. There was two other things yesterday. Yeah. The first ticket was in Winnipeg.
Oh, yeah.
For $600-some-odd. Apparently, a guy, they caught him smoking a reefer in his car. Now, and the cops in Winnipeg took a picture of this, and then they sent it out all over the country. And I'm just thinking, so what about the day before? Was there a law? Was it $600-some-odd for smoking marijuana in your car? See,
I saw
this is
that
the stuff
too.
That pops up.
No, I saw the picture too, and I thought, you know, good for you, cops. And what a doofus the guy was for smoking a joint in his car. Don't be a doofus.
Yeah. No, my question is, and I don't know, is like, it became illegal yesterday. Could they, on October 16th, could you write a ticket for a guy smoking a...
I don't know. Maybe.
Or is that a new provincial law? What made that a story? Because other people have been charged and fined for having marijuana.
Sure.
Or smoking marijuana, and I guess before it was...
under some influence, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and you wouldn't have a bottle of beer and drink it all while on the highway while the police is watching.
And what was the other aspect?
On the Ontario cannabis website yesterday, there was a mistake. There was a vaginal spray, apparently.
Oh.
a cannabis vaginal spray.
Lovely.
To do whatever it was supposed to do down there, but they had the wrong instructions to put it under your tongue. Then nobody spray it under your tongue.
So you spray it under your tongue and then you apply it to the area?
Is maybe. But anyway, that was quickly corrected, and they don't know if anybody has actually sprayed it into their mouth. But, yeah. But look at how wonderful this could be. There's actually a cannabis spray that a woman can use down there to get relief from whatever. I don't know. What would that be?
Maybe it gets that area high. This is all tingly-wingly. Phil, you're the expert on that area. What happens when does it get all tingly-wingly?
Well, you see, you administer it with your mouth. No, what I mean is you got your somatic effects, and it's beautiful. It goes all the way down, transfers.
Phil, you're grossing me out.
Well,
yeah.
And now let us journey together to Humble and Fred's Valley of Love and Delight. It is a gift.
The gift to be simple, 'tis the gift to be free. It's the gift to come down where you want to be.
Humble
and Fred, we find ourselves in the place just Fred. 'Twill be in the Valley of
Humble and Fred.
This is Humble and Fred.
The best of Humble and Fred. Powered by FYI Music News, The Retirement Sherpa, Gig Sky, The Chambers Plan, Spearhead Brewing Company, and Strain Print.